Of all the animals, the horse is the best friend of the Indians. If an Indian wishes to gain something, he promises his horse that if the horse will help him, he will paint it with native dye, that all may see that help has come to him through the aid of his horse.
This is Wisdom of the Elders, dedicated to preserving and sharing the history and culture, songs and stories of Native North American peoples. I'm Arlie Neskai of the Diné Nation. In today's program, we honor the horse and Native culture. In Tribal Rhythms, Nico Nguyen shares songs and dances for honoring horses, and a few for stealing them, too.
The horses race on decorated hides and blankets, pasture on flower blossoms, and drink many kinds of waters.
We'll also be hearing from Judy Blue Horse Skelton, the late Judy Trejo, and the Turtle Island Storytellers. Next up, Shoshone sculptor, rodeo cowboy, and Hollywood stuntman, Rusty Houts. Stay with us. You're listening to Nicole doing Black Mountain from the album Passion Spirit on the Natural Visions label. I'm Arlie Neskai, and you're listening to Wisdom of the Elders. Today, we honor the horse and native culture. We'll meet a Shoshone-Bannock man who understands the horse as only a real wrangler can. Do you remember the TV Western hit Bonanza? You may not know that one of Haas's stunt doubles was Shoshone Indian Rusty Houts. Houts has known horses ever since he can remember. In this next segment, Barbara Roberts presents his perspective with the story of the thrilling integration of the horse into the American scene.
Prior to European contact, the Shoshone-Bannock people enjoyed a rich and fulfilling culture. It was a lifestyle based around the lush, fertile landscape of the West. Shoshone elder Rusty Houts juxtaposes life before and after the arrival of the horse.
The Comanche, but them days, was part of the Shoshone Nation, the way I understand it. So they brought them, no doubt brought them up to us. And because we were about the first ones in this country, I understand, that did have the horse. Before they had the horse, they had to pack everything afoot or put it on their dogs. And then when they got the horse, my gosh, you could go faster and go more places and see more things and do more things, get more game, more wood, and even helped out when like the enemies would come down from Montana and around and to steal women, and then that way they could fight them off a lot better. So the horse really made a big, big difference in the Shoshone people.
The Shoshone prided themselves on their newly acquired riding skills. The horse represented a living and breathing technological revolution. Within a few generations, the horse became deeply embedded in the cultural and spiritual life of the people. The horse became a vital tool in day-to-day living. Once the Shoshone took to horseback, hunting buffalo would never be the same again.
The Indians could ride up on them and chase them and run up alongside of them and shoot them with their bow and arrow. And the way that I understand it, they always shot them back behind the ribs, up so the arrow would go up through the stomach and into the heart. Because, you know, the buffalo was really the Indian supermarket, you might say. Because they say that they used everything. They always told me they used everything except the beller. I think they even used the beller, because if you was on this side of the hill and you had a bunch of buffalo on the other side, and you made sounds like a buffalo over here, they're going to come over to see what's going on. And so really they used the beller too.
Before there were horses, Shoshone hunters used a technique called the buffalo jump to bring down their prey.
They'd all go out and line up along the deals, and they would bring the buffalo there and scare them with blankets and hollering and hooping and run them over the top of the cliffs, and then they'd go down and then they'd butcher them down on the bottom. So it really made a difference.
The horse also revolutionized the Shoshone marketplace. Instead of being confined to travel as far as they could on foot, the horse enabled them to branch out and diversify.
Then in the springtime, they would take off and follow the game back into the hills. And they'd follow them back to hunt and fish and stay up there all summer. Like my grandmother's folks, they all went up towards Yellowstone, where Targhee Pass, Targhee National Forest. Then they would stay up there until fall and then come back and gather down here at the bottoms, what they'd call it. The ones that would leave here would go to Salt Lake and down south, and they'd bring back the pine nuts, the salt, and trade with the southern Indians for the turquoise and silvers. The ones that went west, they would get the camas root and the roots, and also get the salmon, because with the Twin Falls and that, the falls wouldn't let the salmon come up in this area. Then they would trade for the shell beads for the West Coast Indians. Then the ones that went north, they would get the elk, the mountain goat, and the bighorn sheep and trade with the Frenchmen and Dutchmen who was up there. Then the ones that went east would get the buffalo and antelope and trade with Americans. Then they would get the pots, pans, good knives, beads, ammunition, and also whiskey.
Orphaned at 10, Rusty Houts grew up with his grandparents in the mountains around Fort Hall, Idaho.
Oh, yes, I remember when the chokecherries were ripe, we'd hitch up the buggy, and then we'd ride horseback. And they'd back the buggy and back into the chokecherry bushes, and they'd sit there and pick them and pick them and pick them, and the whole family done that. We'd just more or less run the young jackrabbits down, or we'd put snares on their trails and go out and kind of run them back through the fence and snare them that way.
Houts is highly skilled at wrangling, but no matter how skilled, one thing every horseman has in common is that first ride.
First time I can remember being on a horse, I remember my dad plowing and mother taking me out and me riding that horse back in, hanging on to the hames of the horse. My granddad had a buckskin pinto, and they called him Tossatai, which I understand means two spots, because he had one spot on each side just about identical. And my uncle caught him as a wild horse back in the hills, I guess back in the late teens. And he was a neat horse, because we'd go back in the hills, and white kids would come out of Blackfoot, and we'd go back in the hills and play cowboys and Indians. A lot of times we got to be the cowboys, and they got to be the Indians, so it was quite a deal.
It was Rusty's rodeo prowess that made him a hit with television producers. Though he's an elder now, when it comes to rodeos, he still can't stay away. He loves to get into it with folks over who are the better horsemen. It gives him a chance to set the record straight.
I was down in Las Vegas, and there was a champion bulldogger come up, a big guy, and he's in California. He came up and he said, "You know, Rusty, if there was two more Irishmen at the Battle of Little Bighorn, you guys would never won." And I looked at him and I said, "Jack, you never had a chance. You was riding them quarter horses and thoroughbreds, and we was riding Appaloosies and Pintos, and we was running circles around you." So really, that's what I think that the horse did for the Indian, is just he could run circles around his enemy and everything and get there quicker and better and everything. I never had a bike. I never had roller skates. Never had skis, never had ice skates, never had all the things that the kids had in town. But I had a horse, I had a saddle, and I had a rope.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Barbara Roberts.
Singer Annie Humphrey, who won the 2001 Native American Music Award for Best Female Artist, is a committed activist. She's worked at prisons, writing newsletters and singing for inmates. She teaches traditional skills to reservation youth, and she's dedicated her energy to the preservation of the environment and protection of wildlife and natural medicines. The song Spirit Horses was co-written with Carson Gardner and is based on a story by Annie Humphrey's mother, the writer Ann Dunn. We'll be right back.
mothers and children, creatures young and grown, called by mighty drumming of sacred hooves on stone. The sound of spirit horses dancing on a storm. Mercy for the people, old ways, new dreams.
Annie Humphrey was born and raised on an Ojibwe Indian reservation in northern Minnesota. Her album, The Heron Smiled, won Best Country Folk Recording and is available from Makache Music. If you'd like to learn more about Ms. Humphrey or any of the artists or music featured in our programs, visit us on the web at wisdomoftheelders.org. Coming up in Health and Healing, Judy Bluehorse Skelton shares some thoughts on the ancient bond between horses and the Native nations. In Tribal Rhythms, Nico Wynn shows how the horse has been honored with songs and dances. We'll hear from the late Judy Trejo, and on Turtle Island Storytellers, Victor Mandan brings us a story of how the Mandan people once lost and eventually regained their close relationship with the horse.
Do not cry, for I will return. And when I come back, and said I will be much changed, and you will not know me, but those who keep the stories will know who I am.
I'm Arlie Neskai. And this is Wisdom of the Elders.
Oh, Mama Kashka and Amidakwe, Anogotambo, Lea Petoki, Ochiki, when she helped. Echeta Anogotambo.
Great Spirit, grant me vision. That I may not go wrong and find myself in prison of things I have not done. Teach me the secret that I might see. Fill my heart with compassion to love my enemy.
The horse has a special place in many Native cultures as messengers, as healers, and as teachers. In today's Health and Healing segment, Judy Bluehorse Skelton explains.
There are many creation stories that speak of a time long ago when the plant people, the entire plant world, and the animal world, consisting of the four nations of animals, the winged ones that fly, the finned ones that swam in the waters, the creepy crawling, and the four-leggeds, and the humans, the two-leggeds, could all communicate with one another. This was a beautiful time. Everything was in good relationship. However, the humans became greedy. They began to forget the ceremonies. They began gathering too much. They began taking the lives of too many animals, overfishing, overhunting. They forgot to sing the songs. They forgot to be respectful, and things began to fall out of balance. So one of the consequences was that the plant world and the animal world and the humans could no longer communicate with one another, and that was lost. We learn a lot from animals by just observing their habits, observing what plants they go to for medicine, observing how they raise their own, observing how they move through the land, through the forest, or through the desert, watching fish, how they move through the ocean, how they move through the streams, and watching how birds fly. Animals, like plants, are teachers. Today in our society, mainstream society, we forget how to observe, how to tune in, how to quiet down the other busy noises of modern life and reflect and invite in the natural world. Animals' role in healing goes back thousands of years. All cultures around the planet have honored and have acknowledged the role that animals play in healing. Today, there are even studies that show when pets, cats and dogs, are brought in to visit elderly in a nursing home or brought in to visit children in a hospital, that all sorts of levels, like the immune level, goes up. Pain decreases. Positive hormones are released. Laughter, a feeling of joy, warmth, love is all registered on the patient or the elderly's face, and also reflected in the monitors that they've hooked them up to just to do these sorts of clinical tests on the effects that animals have on healing. Each animal has special significance. We can pay attention to animals that have played a prominent role, that have gathered our attention. Maybe as a child there was a particular animal we were fond of. Maybe through dreams a particular animal visits. We want to pay attention to dreams. We want to pay attention to the animals that surround us in our lives because they're there for a reason. Animals many times can be carriers of information, messengers. In some of the tribes' cultures, the horse, which was believed to have been brought by the Spaniards, and the modern-day horse was brought by the Spaniards. However, we also have stories of a smaller horse, the little brother to the horse we know of today, who traveled and was here on North America. And there are stories of the little horse who goes away, tells the people, "Remember me, I'll be coming back, and when I return, I will be bigger, but watch for me." And so when the Spanish brought the horse that we're used to today, he was recognized as the big brother of the little horse that used to be here and was very welcome. Some scientists and archaeologists have thought that there was no horse here, but they have uncovered ceremonial riding crops and other carvings depicting the horse. And they date before the arrival of the Spaniards by hundreds of years. And so we know that the stories the elders have passed down are true, and that the little horse that was here has come back to us. The horse came to many tribes, particularly in the Plateau and the Plains region. The Nez Perce people of the Idaho area, the Plateau region, took the horse and began to breed it into the beautiful Appaloosa. Appaloosa is noted for the distinctive spots on the hindquarters. Very strong horse, beautiful horse. However, during the turn of the century, when the tribes were being moved onto reservations, many were given to soldiers or to white settlers. And for a period of time, the Nez Perce lost the Appaloosa. However, part of the renaissance going on in Indian country today, all over the country, is a restoring of some of our native animals to our native lands. In Idaho, Nez Perce country, we have the Wolf Restoration Program and the center that can be visited by others. Just recently, since 1990s, the Nez Perce have also begun breeding the Appaloosas again. The oldest Appaloosa now is 6 years old in this new breed. One of the healing aspects that the Appaloosa breeding program is offering to young people is an opportunity to connect once more with this traditional horse. They learn how to ride, they learn how to care for, even doing horseshoeing. But But the young people are getting an opportunity to work with horses, building their own self-esteem, while at the same time connecting with this important animal to our culture. Horseback riding and horse programs are being used today to help offer healing to young people, to children with disabilities, to children who do not get outside of the city, who have an urban experience only, and to reconnect them with the animal world and the larger natural world around them. With each breath, with each step, in each moment, may we all create beauty. Osadadu.
Judy Bluehorse Skelton teaches herbal medicine at conferences and workshops in Portland, Oregon. To learn more about the Wolf Recovery Program and the Appaloosa Breeding Program, you can visit the Nez Perce website at www.nezperce.org. That's www.nezperce.org. Here's Nico Wind with Tribal Rhythms.
My horse has a hoof like striped agate. His fetlock is like fine eagle plume. His legs are like quick lightning. My horse's body is like an eagle-feathered arrow. My horse has a tail like a trailing black cloud. His mane is made of rainbows. My horse's ears are made of round corn. My horse's eyes are made of stars. My horse's head is made of mixed waters. My horse's teeth are made of white shell. The long rainbow is in his mouth for a bridle. With it, I guide him. I am wealthy from my horse. Before me, peaceful. Behind me, peaceful. Under me, peaceful. Around me, peaceful. Peaceful voice when he neighs. I am everlasting and peaceful. I stand for my horse. The words from the Navajo war god's horse song express the respect, trust, and deep connection that binds the native people of North America to their beloved horse. The horse, a welcome partner to the dog as a carrier of burdens, was called Elk Dog by the Blackfeet, Big Dog by the Nez Perce, and Shunkawakan, or Holy Dog, by the Lakota. Stories and songs explain the arrival of the horse in some native cultures as a gift from the Great Spirit. The Yuchi tribe of the Muscogee Creek Nation have a dance that honors the horse. The dance and its chant assures the horse that it is of great value, for it provides the gift of carrying the people long distances. Dancers imitate the movement of a horse as they trot with right foot down flat, followed by a quick toe motion of the left foot behind it. The right foot is always on the beat. Dancers follow the leader, who plays a rattle. A lone Navajo horseman traveling at night may use a song of tribute to his horse to create an invisible barrier of protection, a cover that makes it impossible for any negative spirits to penetrate the rider's safe zone. Ed Lee Nate's title for this song, Riding in the Morning, suggests the horseman's return home from a ceremony. The steady rhythm of the sway song is a favorite accompaniment to horseback riding. The Taos Pueblo horsetail dance may have originally been ceremonial, But since ceremonies were outlawed for over a century, the dance is today presented for the entertainment of villagers or as a hospitality gesture to visitors. It derives its name from the horse tails that the dancers wear tied to their waists. The dancers prance and kick while showing off their tails. Because there aren't any set steps or gestures, the dancers are able to improvise movements to the great amusement of those who watch. Horse songs and dances are not all for simply honoring the horse. Many songs are concerned with the stealing or capturing of this amazing animal. In the past, the motivation to acquire horses was great, for horses provided increased efficiency in the hunt and greater mobility. Horses were the preferred standard of value in many native cultures. Stealing horses as a means of acquiring wealth was thus a serious, sometimes deadly, but very exciting game that demonstrated the warrior's skill, bravery, and cunning.
Arizona, Arizona, boing, got it in the boing, on the board, Nevada, Nevada, Vunkodoy, hey, now, Arizona, Arizona.
Maybe that's why today horse stealing songs are sometimes considered warrior songs, like this Paiute horse stealing song from Ed Williams as sung by Judy Trejo. It's about Paiute warriors going to Arizona to steal horses from a tribe there and having to escape through rows of tall corn.
Arizona, Arizona, boy, not a boy, not a boy, Nevada, Nevada, Arizona.
Sometimes the relationship between horse and rider is not an easy one. When a rider wants to use grazing horses, he or she has to hunt them up and drive them home. A hand game song referring to the search for the markers hidden in the hands of the players makes an analogy to finding and catching one's horse. Now I go to seek my horse, so here I stand and look about me. So here I stand and look about me. Now I go to seek my horse. A Navajo skip dance song sung by the Turtle Mountain Singers laments, "It's your fault that you're looking for your horses all night. How could you? How could you? It's your fault. Now you've got to look for your horses all night long." On the other hand, there is the song of the horse speaking to its rider. "Black hair rope is what you used in roping me. You treated me badly. You even threw me down and tied me. Not satisfied with that, you tied a knot in my tail. That made me disgusted." Joanna A. begins each day from his hogan in the east. Carrying the golden disc, the sun, he rides across the skies to his hogan in the west. He has 5 horses, a horse of turquoise, one of white shell, and one of pearl shell. These he rides when the skies are blue. He has a red shell horse and a horse of coal. He mounts them when the skies are dark and stormy. The horses race on decorated hides and blankets, pasture on flower blossoms and drink many kinds of waters. When a horse rolls or shakes himself, he raises glittering grains of sacred pollen, like that used in Navajo ceremonies. The Navajo sings of the horses of Joanna'e, so that someday he might have horses like those of the sun god. He sings this song for the blessing and protection of his animals. The horse is intricately woven into the mystical or religious fabric of many tribes. Membership in the Sioux Horse Owner Society was offered to those who had dreamed horse medicine dreams, granting them special powers. Lone Man, a Sioux storyteller and drummer for Sun Dances, expressed the mystery and beauty of the horse in a dream song called The Horseman in the Cloud. Horsemen are coming from north and the west. They fly through the air and into the clouds with galloping hooves and thundering sounds. They came to me. They came to me. Black Elk, an Oglala Sioux prophet and healer, or holy man, had a vision of the horse nation when he was very young. This song describes the great beauty of the horse and offers a sense of hope and strength to its singers. My horses prancing, they are coming. My horses neighing, they are coming. Prancing, they are coming. All over the universe they come. A horse nation, they will dance. May you behold them. A horse nation, they will dance. May you behold them. A horse nation, they will dance. May you behold them. A horse nation, they will dance. May you behold them.
Tribal Rhythms is produced by our music director, Nico Wind, and written by Ann Morin. If you'd like to learn more about any of the artists or music featured in our programs, visit us on the web at wisdomoftheelders.org. Coming up, we'll hear from the late Judy Trejo, and on Turtle Island Storytellers, we'll learn about the Mandan people and their ancient friend, the horse.
And I just stood there with goosebumps all over me, just looking at that, and I thought, how old are my people? Because that animal had disappeared from the face of this continent some 30,000 years ago.
Stay with us. I'm Arlie Neskai, and this is Wisdom of the Elders.
Wisdom of the Elders strives to share these rich teachings with all races of mankind via public radio and other educational venues. Wisdom of the Elders has been produced with funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail, National Park Service, and Spirit Mountain Community Fund, Grand Ronde, Oregon.
Whether you have four legs or two, you have a place in the circle of creation. One of our favorite two-leggeds, the late Judy Trejo, introduces us to a few relatives, including singing bears, giggling jackrabbits, and laughing bobcats.
One of my favorite bear stories involves a Shoshone hunter. He went hunting one time and he heard this kind of a clacking sound and some singing. So he crawled on his tummy and looked down into this little valley. And the bears were standing upright. They were dancing with their hands on each other's shoulders, and they were swaying back and forth and going forwards and backwards. And he observed them for a long time and listened to their songs. He went back to his village. He said, "This is what I saw. The bears, they sing and they dance, just like us human beings do. What do you think of that? So they all talked it over. They said, those must be our relatives. If they sing and dance the way we do, they are relatives of ours. So therefore, we should never kill them, and we should never eat them. And because of that story, that has been passed along for many generations, Shoshones won't eat bear. Neither will a lot of Paiutes. I like bear's role in some of the legends. There is a legend about the origin of cyclones. And my elders used to say, Sumu Otnos, once long ago, Nemika Nanakwatnatus, when we were all the same, our country, meaning the Northwest, was plagued with cyclones, which were referred to as evil winds. Animals would get blown away. They'd have to walk all the way back home. Their food supplies would get blown away. Their shelters would get blown away. And they were really getting tired of this. So they had a meeting one day, a huge meeting. Everybody was there except for the coyote. And the woman that presided over this meeting was Grandmother Owl. She was the head honcho. She directed the meeting. They said, what shall we do about these evil winds? We all don't like them. So our aunt, the bear, she gets up and she says, let me. I'm big, I'm strong, I'm ferocious, I've got courage. Let me chase them away. Grandmother Owl says, no, my aunt, I don't think you're the right person to do this. Says, you're much too big and clumsy. You'd chase them for a little ways and then you'll get tired. Upon hearing this, the jackrabbit and the bobcat were laughing. They were rolling on the ground in these fits of giggles, and they said, sea bear, no matter how tough and big you think you are, you can't help us this time. Ha, ha, ha. Bear had her feelings hurt. Her sister-in-law, the deer, she steps forth. She said, let me do this. I'm very swift on my feet. I can chase these evil winds far, far away, so they'll never come back. Grandmother Owl thought about this. She said, I'm sorry, my sister-in-law. You're the wrong person for this. Says, you're much too gentle of heart. You would chase them for a while, and you would feel sorry for them, and you'd let them all go. Bobcat and Jackrabbit thought this was funny still. They're still rolling around on the ground laughing. Then Bobcat, he had a serious moment. He said, let me. I'm young and I'm smart. I can get rid of these evil winds. Grandmother Owl looked at him and says, no, you are much too foolish. You cannot help us. And the rabbit really went into a fit of giggles. So Bobcat kind of had his feelings hurt. You're too silly, the rabbit told him. Look at you. You're too silly to help us. Porcupine steps forth and says, I have a good idea. Let's gather all these evil winds and let's put it in one big sack. But Grandmother Owl says, no, wait a minute. That is a brilliant idea. We will gather all the evil winds and put them in one sack. But the one to carry it away is the badger, because the badger has the ability to disappear very quickly in times of danger. Badger didn't want to go. He was sad. He didn't want to leave his family. But all the animals and all the birds, all living creatures got together, gathered up these evil winds and put it in a sack. On the appointed day, Badger was given the bag. He had tears in his eyes as he left his family. He didn't know when he was going to come back. The birds sang him on his way. The flowers danced for him to try to bring a smile to his face. That didn't work. He traveled many, many days. And he was traveling one afternoon. Coyote pokes his head up and says, oh, there goes Badger. Badger's got a bag on his back. I wonder if he has something to eat. He has to have something to eat. I am so hungry. So he trots down there. Hi, Badger. Badger said, go away, leave me alone. I'm doing something very important for our people. Have anything to eat in your bag? He said, "No, go away. I'm busy." "Come on, Badger. You sure you don't have something to eat?" He said, "I said go away." So Coyote jumps up on the pack, and he's riding, and he's reaching down and covering Badger's eyes. "I want to peek in your bag." "No, it's very dangerous. Do not do this." "Can't I have one little peek?" Coyote told Badger. Finally, the Badger got tired of him and said, "Here." Handed him the sack, and he dug a hole and disappeared. And Coyote wound up in a place, part of the country in the United States, where they have cyclones now. And it is because of this we don't have cyclones in our country.
The late Judy Trejo was a Paiute song carrier, an educator, an award-winning recording artist. She is deeply missed.
My mother, when I was a child, my mother used to give me tobacco. Or sometimes she would give me a pot of coffee and some empty cups. Or sometimes she would give me a sack of biscuits. And she would say, "Go down there by the river. The old men are there. They're probably playing dominoes or cards or checkers. Bring your gift to them. Sit and listen. They will talk."
As a young boy, Victor Mandan spent many hours listening to the stories told by his elders. Though the old men may have teased him at the time, Victor would become a keeper of the Mandan stories.
So I would show up with whatever I happened to have that particular day, and they would say, "Ah, he's here again." And then they'd say, "Yeah, well, tell him something." And the other one would say, "You tell him something. I told him something yesterday. I'm all out of stories. You tell him something." They would carry on like that for a while, and finally one of them say, "Well, you know, I think I remember one." Then they would go ahead and tell me.
Today, Victor Mandan shares a bit of the ancient history of the Mandan people and raises some intriguing ideas about the relationship of the horse to early people.
As they traveled, they had two little friends with them. Well, they were almost identical, except their behavior was different. One of them barked and ate anything that they threw out, rotten meat, bad soup, whatever they threw, this little critter ate it. And they called him Mushuga, or dog. And the other one ate grass, and they fed him leaves. Now, he was a vegetarian. And they put packs on his back also, and he helped the people to move. And they had another slightly different name for him, but basically it meant that he ate only grass. And as they moved up the Mississippi and up into the branches of it, they had these two animals. One day, the camp crier got all the people in the village to come to the edge of the village, and he said, "Our little friend is leaving us." And one of the two was standing on the edge of the woods, and he told the people, he said, "Do not cry, for I will return. And when I come back," he said, "I will be much changed, and you will not know me. But those who keep the stories will know who I am. Remember, I'm the one who eats the grass." He said, "When I come back, I will be tall as a man, and swift as the wind." He said, "I will be strong to carry much on my back, maybe two or three men, or maybe heavy packs, but I will come back, but I will be gone for a while. Don't forget me." The people cried. They begged him not to go, but he said he had to go. They accused each other of perhaps not feeding him enough, giving him enough water. Did somebody overload him the last time he worked? Did he have to work too hard? They said, "No, we never overloaded him. Always give him a lot of water and a lot of food. Good to him. But still, he was going to leave." And so, he left. He left, and they never had him anymore. But they had the other one, the one they called Dog. And he helped. And they moved up the river. Finally, after many thousands of years, two hunters out on the plains seen a strange animal, and they were afraid. It was something they had never seen before. And they ran home to the village and they asked. They said, "We've seen a strange animal and we don't know what to make of it." So they were asked, "Did it have horns?" And they said, "No." "How many legs did it have?" "Oh, it had 4 legs. "Did it have fur or feathers?" "It had fur." "What was he doing?" "No, he was out on the prairie grazing." "Oh, okay." But still, they didn't know, so they sent them to another village. And they didn't get no answer there. And in the third village, there was a storekeeper said, "I think I know what you saw. I think you seen Mashugabedi Agadu Ditosh, the one who eats the grass." Said, "If that is him, he is our friend. Do not kill him. Go to him and be his friend and bring him back." So they were loaded down then with pemmican. They were loaded down with dried corn, berries, corn balls. All they had to do was to run, and every once in a while, perhaps, when they came to a stream, drink a little water and go on, because they had a big supply of food. So these two hunters returned out to the plains, found what they were after, and they followed them. Horses must stop and eat. These men didn't have to. Eventually, the horses moved slower and slower, and the men got closer and closer. And eventually, the men had their hands on these animals. And after many weeks, they rode back into the village riding on horses and driving a small herd in front of them. And then the Mandan had horses. I was told this story in the 1940s by men who had never been to school, men who did not speak English, men who could still remember pre-reservation days, old men. So I just put that thought in my memory and thank them for a nice story. And then one day in 1961 or 62, I was at Lawrence, Kansas for a graduation. I went up to the University of Kansas, and there they had a museum of natural history. And I seen this little fellow in a glass case. They called him Eohippus, early horse. And he stood there about the size of a dog. And I just stood there with goosebumps all over me just looking at that. And I thought, how old are my people? Because that animal had disappeared from the face of this continent some 30,000 years ago, according to the scientists who study bones.
Victor Mandan is a musician and storyteller living in South Dakota. Thanks for joining us today on Wisdom of the Elders. If you'd like to learn more about any of the stories or music you hear in our program, visit us on the web at wisdomoftheelders.org. Thank you, horse people, for all you have done through the generations. Your untiring spirit, willingness to friendship, your loyal, free, and proud ways. Without you, we surely would have suffered more. Upon you, we have traveled with the wind, and with courage together, we rode into danger again and again. Cannon overhead, bullets whistling by, so many gave your life with us, gave your life for us. You are our spirit brother and spirit sister. We will remember you in songs and dances. And when we see one of us who has such courage, leadership, love for the people, We will decorate you once again, paint you in the old way, telling stories of our journeys together, pile you high with blankets and treasures, decorate you with beads and flowing cloth, and gift you, for in your heart you carry our stories, prayers, and dreams. Thank you, horse people, for all you have done through the generations, your untiring spirit, willingness to friendship, your loyal, free, and proud ways. I'm Arlie Neskai, Hakona, till we meet again.
Wisdom of the Elders is produced in Portland, Oregon, with funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Lewis and Clark National Historic Trail, National Park Service, and Spirit Mountain Community Fund, Grand Ronde, Oregon. Learn more about the people and music you hear on Wisdom of the Elders. Purchase educational material or make a contribution to fund programming on our website at wisdomoftheelders.org. Discover the growing network of Indigenous oral historians, storytellers, and song carriers. Visit the Turtle Island Storytellers Network at turtleislandstorytellers.net. Executive producer of Wisdom of the Elders is Rose Hybear. Co-producers Clark Salisbury and William Ward. Script editor and director Larry Johnson. Writer Anne Morin. Our theme music is by music director Nico Wind. Field producer Jerry Miller at KISU Radio in Pocatello, Idaho. Website assistance from Clark Salisbury, Kara Briggs, and Rebecca Freeman. Educational materials by Larry McClure. Distribution manager Richard Fonseca. Legal advisor Judd Carasone. Special thanks to Native American Public Telecommunications and American Indian Radio on satellite.